With your help, we can continue to fight for freedom. This is not possible without your generosity. Join our quest for the truth and our freedom and donate today. Simply go to tntradio.live. You're listening to the No Fly Zone with Greg Mabry on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Hello, friends and listeners. Welcome back once again to the No Fly Zone. I'm your host, Greg Mabry. Before we introduce today's guest, I wanted to repeat a few things I said about 18 months ago in an article that I published on my Substack page. And it'll hopefully set out the stall for today's discussion. For me, there's a profound irony for Big Pharma to digest, when even at this stage, few in the industry have yet to grasp. Now, that is the fact that we all know that the so-called anti-vaxxer cohort, as much reviled as we know, or at least it was prior to the outbreak of COVID, but since then, to the extent that the anti-vaxxer movement functioned as a viable force of resistance to the agenda of Big Pharma, and placing to one side at the moment any judgments assorted pro-vaxxers might make about those who are perceived as part of this so-called anti-vax movement, and I'm using air quotes there, folks, around the anti-vax phrase, and as well as how much credibility or legitimacy they enjoyed with the general public at that point, and thirdly, whether that anti-vaxxer argument might or might not be justified in part or in whole on sound science. For its part, though, the medical healthcare and scientific profession and the pharmaceutical cartel and, of course, the wider pro-vaxxer cohort, and I'm thinking here, of course, the establishment media is one outstanding example, and health policymakers have come to mind as well as our politicians. They've probably inspired far more confirmed anti-vaxxers, or at least vaccine hesitants, now than they ever were before the rollout of the COVID agenda. Now, I don't have any data to confirm this, but I believe the movement is growing with the relentless tide of stories about adverse events, including sudden adult death syndrome, as it's come to be called, people just dropping dead at the drop of a hat. Pardon the turn of phrase. And as a sort of corollary to that, I guess it could be argued that with COVID and the manner in which the powers that be have seen fit to manage it, Big Pharma has, by virtue of its insatiable greed, its relentless criminal pursuit of profit at the expense of every other priority, may have actually cooked its golden goose after all. We can all but hope that that is indeed how it plays out. Now, in order to introduce our guest today, a little bit of background, the Australian Vaccination Risks Network is a wide community of sponsors and volunteers who are dedicated to ensuring that all Australians are afforded their right to informed medical choices. It was started in 1984 by a group of parents and health professionals who were concerned about the lack of scientifically based information on the other side of the vaccination issue. Especially those to do with the risks and dangers of vaccination. Now, the main person behind this initiative was Meryl Dorey, and she's our guest today. Meryl, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much, Greg. It's wonderful to be here.
And thank you for joining us. Really appreciate that. Meryl, we'll get right into it. Let's begin with a little bit of your own personal background and how you became involved with AVN. I believe you are, in fact, the instigator, the founder of AVN. Is that correct?
Yes, that's right. And at the time, it's funny you talk about pro-vaccine and anti-vaccine, because at the time when I chose to vaccinate my son, and it wasn't really a choice, it was just the thing that was done, I was about as pro-vaccine a person as you'd ever want to know. I didn't think that there were any harms to vaccination. I thought there was only benefit. And I wasn't told any different. My doctor did not inform me. And none of the literature that the government gave out, which at that time, and as far as I know today as well, is sponsored by the pharmaceutical companies, actually mentioned anything about problems. So it was because my son had reactions to his vaccine at 2 months and then again at 18 months that I really started going down a rabbit hole and looking into all the issues surrounding vaccination. And what I found which shocked me, I have to say, at the time, was that there is and was a great deal of information on the fact that vaccines cannot prevent disease, never have been able to. That's why I don't call them immunizations, because they do not provide immunity, and that there are a range of side effects from the common and mild swelling at the site and fevers through to permanent injury and death. And my son was permanently injured. Thank goodness he's, you know, 95% better. But, you know, he still has ongoing issues. And it was learning about that, doing a lot of research, and also meeting an awful lot of other parents who had suffered, whose children had suffered similarly to my son, that was the reason for the establishment of the Australian Vaccination Network, as it was known then. And it was because we felt it was unfair for parents to be making these choices without having any information on the downside. Only benefits were given to people, not anything to do with risks or ineffectiveness. And I seriously believe today that if parents were told the truth about vaccines at the time they were going to make a decision for their children, not one parent would ever choose to give their child a vaccine.
Are you suggesting that, well, again, this is one of the things that you and I had hoped to talk about, and again, it leads back into my introduction about, you know, where people are at. I know that I certainly didn't give vaccinations a great deal of thought before COVID. You know, I was sort of possibly like many people, just sat on the fence and didn't really think too much about it. And I've got a couple of friends and relatives involved in the medical profession, and if you were to bring up the subject of vaccinations with them, everything was hunky-dory, you know, and, you know, I didn't think too much about that. But certainly, you know, as per my introduction, you know, I certainly, like many people, have started to completely rethink not only my attitude about sitting on the fence. You could not sit on the fence anymore. That was definitely something you couldn't do. And after looking into it a bit like you, did my research and, you know, quickly came home to me that, you know, everything, you know, not everything was as hunky-dory as we'd all been led to believe. We'll come back to this in a moment, Meryl, but you, as the Australian Vaccination Network, I believe, was the organisation that initiated and was involved in the Vax bus tour recently that went around Australia. Is that correct, that it was an AVN initiative?
It is in Australia. The Vaxxed movement actually started in the United States, and it was started by Dr. Andrew Wakefield, who many of your listeners would know.
Yes.
He was the person who originally brought into question the safety of the measles, mumps, rubella vaccine, and lost
his career. Because he's been
vilified.
That's right.
Yeah. So he and Del Bigtree, who a lot of people would know also from The High Wire, and Polly Tommy, who is the mother of a vaccine-injured child, and she now has a weekly show on the Children's Health Defense Television. They started this in the United States, and Polly Tommy actually came out to Australia a few years ago, and we had a Vax tour with a rented van, a Toyota van, and we went from Queensland down to Adelaide in South Australia with her, with Dr. Brian Hooker and Dr. Suzanne Humphreys. And as a result of that, what we saw very clearly was that there is a large population of people in Australia whose children, at that point it was mostly children, have suffered serious side effects following vaccination, and they were voiceless, powerless, and invisible. And what the Vax movement does is it gives them back their voice. It gives them the power of having their stories told. And because we live stream these interviews that are done on the bus, and we also put them up on our website and on several social media platforms, including Rumble, they actually are no longer invisible. people see their stories and they are able to share what happened to them. And that is so powerful. We've been doing that for the last, we started just before the COVID lockdown. So our first year and a half was very difficult because it was hard for us to get out. But we've done 6 tours in just the last few months and have gone from Southeast Queensland down to Tasmania. We've only just come back from Tassie a short time ago. And we've, what happens is everyone who shares a vaccine injury story or a story of someone who's died following vaccination signs on the bus, either for themselves or for the vaccine injured person. And we have over 650 signatures on the bus right now. And in addition to that, we've done about 300 interviews with people who've either lost their jobs due to the mandates or people who came and reported that they didn't vaccinate and shared their experiences in that regard too.
Would you now, in your view, I mean, was the Vax Bus Tour successful, and how would you actually have measured the success of the tour?
It's very successful. The way that I'd measure it is in two things. One, every place the Vax Bus goes, communities spring up of people who didn't even know that they were on the same page, and now they are starting groups sharing support. That's really, really important. The other thing is just the fact that people feel that they're heard and listened to and believed. I constantly ask people, how do you feel now that you've shared your story? Because I do most of the interviews now. And to a person, they say, I feel totally relieved. I feel like for once someone's actually believing me, because the government and the media are saying that they don't exist, or they're lying, or they're trying to blame something for what they've experienced. And none of that is true. They've had serious side effects as a result of medical procedures that in the case of vaccines, not just COVID, but all vaccines have never been tested for safety or efficacy.
Yeah. And that, since obviously going back to 1994, you've been clearly active in raising awareness of the dangers and risks involved in vaccinations. And over that period, I mean, did you feel, I mean, it's amazing actually, in my view, that you've persisted for as long as you have done. Because for two reasons. One is that you wouldn't have had, prior to the internet, access to as much information as we do now. And secondly, it's only just in recent years, and even just going back a little bit before COVID hit, that, you know, maybe these issues have come to the fore a little bit more. And certainly since COVID hit, they've really hit home for people. In that time, my question here is, how have you seen the prevailing mood for and against not just vaccinations, but just against, or if you like, for and against the medical profession, for and against our medical authorities in terms of how they establish public policy and implement public policy around public health? How have you seen that change over the years?
Well, it's been a bit of a double-edged sword, I've got to tell you, Greg. When we first started in 1994, there were no compulsory vaccinations. In 1998, the federal government was going to amend what was called the Child Care Payments Act to make it a requirement for all parents to prove to a doctor that they knew enough about vaccinations whereby they would still be entitled to all of their government payments. And the AVN, myself, and one other person, Lynn Kershaw, went down to Canberra. We had no experience in lobbying. We spent 2 weeks there. At that time, it was not considered to be socially unacceptable or antisocial to actually question the safety and efficacy of vaccines. We had the support of all of the independents and some of the labor politicians, and we got legislation passed called the Conscientious Objector Clause, which allowed an entire generation of children to not be discriminated against in school, in preschool, in childcare. And we're very proud of that. Sadly, in 2016, with the introduction of No Jab, No Pay, that went out the window. But what we've seen is we've gone from being basically just, you know, people who may have been considered a little eccentric because we question vaccines to being the Antichrist because we question vaccines. And that is not a good thing. But the good thing is, and I can tell you this from my experience on the vaxxed bus, the people who came and reported their reactions to COVID, the people who came, the medical professionals, doctors, nurses, all sorts of therapists, anesthetists, who came and said that they lost their job or they had a reaction, I would ask them, before COVID vaccines, did you ever question the safety and efficacy of a vaccine? And almost to a person, they would say no, but no, now they tell me that they will never take another vaccine as long as they live.
That actually that leads into another question I was going to come back to later, and you might have already answered it, and that was, you know, how you've seen the shift in attitude by medical healthcare professionals themselves over the years, and particularly over the last 3 years. That's certainly something we might just come back to if we have any time a little bit later on. But one question I'll ask just quickly before we go to a break, Meryl, were you surprised at all that they tried to bring in the mandatory vaccinations under COVID? Did that surprise
no,
you?
No, we've been predicting it. We've been predicting it for a long time. We saw, 5 years ago, we said that the next thing that was coming down the pike was going to be vaccinations for adults, and it was going to be mandatory. And that was when the you-know-what was going to hit the fan. Because for some reason, we didn't really question it when it was done for children. But for adults, that was going to be another matter altogether. And it is.
Yeah. And when you're talking about that, you're talking about the brown, smelly, squishy stuff hitting the fans. We have to go to a break, Meryl. We'll come back and we'll continue this conversation. It's Greg Mabry here on the No-Fly Zone. I'm speaking with Meryl Dorey from the Australian Vaccination Risks Network. We'll be back shortly after this break.
TNT Radio's Dirk Pohlman.
What I did, for example, I sent it to my father, who was not very favorable of Russia, and I sent him some of the Putin speeches that you had translated, and then I asked him what he thought about it, and he said, the man is reasonable, completely reasonable. And that is really what happens sometimes. That was one of the things I always wondered, does Putin write these intellectually very interesting speeches himself, or does he have speech writers like it's usual in the West?
Putin, several times a year, is going on public discussions on events, and there he is for 3-4 hours live, and sometimes even with Western journalists who try to grill him, as we call it in Germany. It's very, very fascinating that he has a very wide knowledge. So I don't think he's writing his speeches really well, but really himself. But maybe he's taking part in it, because when you see what he is saying when he's talking free on a podium, being with a journalist or with several journalists for 4 hours without any papers or whatever, you see that the speeches he is reading and the things he's saying in discussions is quite the same. So either he has good speechwriters who know him, or he is doing it himself with them.
The Dirk Pohlman Show on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Let's take advantage of the freedoms that we have while we have them to advance the kingdom's objective, to be salt and light.
Freedom is hard. Election security involves you, involves the voters.
This election for people of faith is vital that we see a change, because the war against Christians is at an all-time high.
Transparency is the key not only to having honest elections, but to maintaining public trust in those elections.
Our ability to vote is not being withheld from us. No one's trying to stop you from voting.
The one place the American people can have a say is at the ballot box. That's why the Democrats and the far left are working so hard to get rid of all election integrity.
We cannot let our elections be anything but transparent. It is at the very heart of freedom in a free society.
And if we lose America, it's all over, because the world has looked to America for hope.
Free and fair at salemnow.com.
The Band-Aid has been ripped off. 30% of parents now question the entire vaccine schedule. Lighting the fuse for freedom. TNT Radio.
Listeners, welcome back to the No-Fly Zone. I'm Greg Mabry. I have as my guest today Meryl Dorey, who is with the Australian Vaccination Risks Network, an organisation that was started almost 30 years ago, trying to raise awareness about issues related to vaccination programs. And much of what they have been worried about or concerned about or have even predicted many years ago certainly have come to fruition, sadly, since the emergence of COVID. And Meryl, one of those things that we were talking about just before the break, of course, was the emergence of the mandatory vaccination schedule, which, you know, I'm sure took many people by surprise. It didn't take you by surprise or people with whom you had plenty of contact with prior to that, because you had predicted it, of course. And, you know, I mean, I know of several people who, you know, were impacted by that. They either lost their jobs because they refused to get vaccinated, or they themselves, because they didn't want to lose their jobs, were vaccinated and subsequently had, you know, adverse events. I don't know, fortunately, at this point in time, personally, anybody within my circle who has died. But, of course, that's not been the case with many people. But the mandatory vaccination thing, do you think that they will continue to keep pushing this, or do you think that there now is sufficient kind of critical mass for people to not just push back against on mandatory vaccinations, but just resist, if you like, the whole vaccination schedule? What's your thoughts on that? Not just about ordinary people, but also people within the profession as well.
Right. I've got to tell you, Greg, that the medical profession has been such a big disappointment to me personally. And I'm not talking about, there are thousands of doctors who've joined AMPS, you know, the Australian Medical Professional Society, the Red Union. These are the people who have actually left the profession for the most part. They are no longer working within the system. What is left in the system, as far as I'm concerned, and as far as I've been seeing from speaking with people on the vax bus, are the dregs. And I don't use that word lightly. I use it because some of the stories that I've been hearing on the bus and from people who've contacted me beggar belief. There are doctors who have given the jab to people who didn't want it. And they took it because they felt they had to. And one story in particular comes to mind, and it was a woman who took it. She was a nurse in a hospital. She had a heart attack almost immediately after taking the jab. Yeah. The doctor treated her for her heart attack and 6 weeks later said, it's time for your next jab. And she said, if I take another jab, chances are I'm going to die. And he said, well, there's nothing I can do about it. Take it in the hospital and we'll take care of it at that time. So he was willing to risk her having another heart attack because he wasn't willing to give her an exemption. And she left her job. And there are so many stories that we've heard like that. There was a woman who reported for her sister. Her sister had a congenital problem, needed to have a certain injection. I think it was some kind of iron injection or she would die. The doctor said he wouldn't give her the iron injection unless she took the jab. She said, but I'm already immunocompromised. And he said, well, you're going to have to take the jab or I won't, you know, give you the injection. So she took the jab. And she ended up dying. And before she died, she said to the doctor, you've killed me. And he said to her, well, you know, that's just the breaks. That's the way things go. So there are people who are left in the profession who have no heart, who will preserve their career and their income and their livelihood over your best interests, totally against the Hippocratic Oath. And I believe that until enough health professionals stand up and say they're not going to be tools in this great genocide that we're seeing right now, the profession is not going to change. But on the other hand, what we are seeing is that people are walking away from the medical profession. These are people who used to go and see doctors on a regular basis. They are no longer doing that. They are finding chiropractors, naturopaths, homeopaths. They are using natural therapies rather than allopathy. And that can only be a good thing.
Again, alluding back to my introduction, Meryl, you know, quite apart from the fact that, you know, that the attitude towards vaccinations, the broader attitude towards the health profession, whether it's to do with vaccinations or just taking drugs or, you know, the what they call, of course, the allopathic side of medical treatment, that people now have become far more suspicious of it. And I could see that trend happening well before COVID. I've got a couple of friends, for example, well, many friends who subscribe to natural treatments and homeopathy and naturopaths and people like that. So, you know, I've seen a big trend just on a personal level in that direction. But I don't have any data to support this, but I think just anecdotally, you know, it's safe to say that people now are going to be seriously questioning what's happening in the traditional medical profession. And I think that's a good thing, but I again do not think for one moment or expect that the medical profession as a whole or the medical establishment has any idea of the negative impact that the last 3 years have had on people's confidence, faith, or trust in the profession overall. Would that be your kind of assessment of things? What implications does that have for our public health system down the track?
Well, I have to say, I do think you're right. I think that the people who are left in the medical system are just so not used to introspection, are so within the system that they can't even see or think for themselves any longer. And that's a really sad thing. These are not stupid people, but these are people who are not educated in what health actually is. And when you call it the public health system, this is one thing that I personally have come to find in the last 3 years. Like many people, COVID has given me an opportunity to slow down and actually do a lot of research. And there are many people out there like myself. And I don't believe there is such a thing as public health. And I think public health in and of itself is a dangerous, dangerous concept. Without the health of the individual, we cannot have health. Full stop. And vaccines are a great case in point, because right now, the only reason that we can have mandates is because we've been told that the vaccine will not protect you unless the people that you are around are also protected.
Yeah.
And the fact is, if your vaccine doesn't protect you from me, then it can't protect you full stop. So
exactly.
There is no science here. It's just superstition. Public health does not exist. And the health of the population in Australia is worse than it has ever been. Our excess mortality is up a minimum of 17%. 20,000 Australians extra died in 2022. These are people who died from other causes. Now, SBS put something out saying these are deaths from COVID. That is not true at all. These are not deaths from COVID. A certain percentage of them are, but it's only a small percentage. So we have a very sick population. We already had a very sick population of children because of overuse of antibiotics and vaccines. And now we have a very sick population of adults, and it needs to stop.
Look, I can't see that getting any better, Meryl. I mean, if we extrapolate what's happening at the moment in terms of the number of people who are experiencing adverse events and even deaths, of course, and particularly for those younger generations, going forward, we're going to see, I believe, an enormous increase in adverse events that take place down the track as a result of the COVID vaccines and even premature deaths. What will be difficult to determine is whether that was actually directly or indirectly related to the COVID vax. But if there is a significant spike in deaths across the board, and statistically that shows anomalies, then, you know, a lot of people are going to be asking a lot of very difficult questions or a lot of appropriate questions about, hang on, how did this happen? Of course, you know, you don't have to be Nostradamus to work out that that's where things are going if what we're seeing now in terms of the adverse events are going to happen. My greatest fear, of course, is how this is going to play out with our younger generation, not just my own children, but everybody's children and grandchildren of this age, and how that's going to play out. And but you know, it's a real worry. Just moving track here a little bit. You talk about the medical profession themselves, and of course, one of the most high-profile people in the medical profession here in Australia was Karen Phelps. And you've had a few things to say about Karen Phelps. She herself experienced, and her partner experienced, some adverse events, speaking thereof. Yet she was aware, and this is my understanding of the situation, correct me if I'm wrong, she was well aware of the dangers and the risks involved with the vaccines, that she had personally herself, and in particular via her partner, who had experienced some serious adverse events as well. But she, for some time, I think 12, maybe even 18 months, did not say anything about the dangers or the risks of that. Can you speak to that situation with Karen Phelps? For listeners who aren't aware of who Karen Phelps was, she was the former, I believe, president of the AMA. Is that correct?
That's right. She was president of the Australian Medical Association, and she was also in federal parliament, I believe, for a certain amount of time. Yeah. And, I had great admiration for her because I felt she was a very brave person. You know, she came out as gay very early in the piece. And I thought that was an incredibly brave thing. But I also have had my issues with her because she attacked the AVN and myself because of our stance on informed choice. And I thought that was quite wrong. But whatever the case may be, we're entitled to disagree. What she did in this situation was, however, beyond the pale. She, as you said, she and her wife both had reactions. I think her wife was more seriously injured than she was. Yeah. They both knew that it was as a result of the COVID jab. They were told it was as a result of the COVID jab. And not only did they stay silent on this for, I think it was over 12 months, I'm not sure how long, but during that period of time, Karen Phelps was recommending that people get the jab, including children.
And to me,
it's totally, not only hypocritical, I think it's malpractice. When you know that something can harm someone and you stay silent on that, well, you become an accessory after the fact. You become complicit in at least harm, if not murder. And people looked up to her. People looked up to Karen Phelps. And she was more afraid of losing her reputation, in my opinion. I don't know what her motivation was, but in my opinion, she was more afraid of losing her reputation and her income than she was of doing the right thing. And I just think that's totally immoral.
Another irony there, Meryl, in that if she had actually come out and said, hang on a minute, I'm going to do a bit of a rethink about this because of these experiences, her reputation would have soared, in my view. That's how I see it. But she chose not to do that. And as far as I'm concerned, she's not just a hypocrite. You know, she has acted and behaved extremely unethically. Yes. Unethically. And as far as I'm concerned, her reputation is non-existent at the moment. Her professional reputation, I think she's destroyed that. And certainly looking at some of the comments and the feedback that I saw, and this was following your Substack article as well, that's where I first picked up on the Karen Phelps situation. That was actually what prompted me to contact you and say, look, you know, let's talk on the show. So the Karen Phelps situation is one that struck a real chord with me, and I felt that that was something that should have really given people pause. Here was the former AMA president who's come out and said, yes, we had problems with the vax, and yet it didn't seem to register with people that in actual fact she kept this information under wraps. And how and why that has remained sort of below the radar, I'm not sure. A lot of that, of course, has to do with the failure of the mainstream media to actually report on it. I think that and of course, that brings us to the point, and we have to go to a break very shortly. We might have to continue this a little bit after the break, but I want to go back a little bit to just examining two things. One was actually the response of the medical profession and the broader medical establishment to COVID, but also the response by the media as well, Meryl, because, you know, those two things together, I think, were principal catalysts for moving the whole narrative along. And I don't know whether you saw it. I did send it to you, but we both sort of complain about being inundated with information from time to time. But I did send you, it was a two-part article that I wrote, just it was a critical analysis of the medical profession's response, which included some interesting feedback that I got from a poll that I conducted on Twitter, and it also included some personal reflections on my interactions with my own personal doctors throughout the time of COVID. And the title of this article actually called it Whistling Past the Graveyard, and it was about, you know, how not just the media, but certainly the medical profession, you just could not bring these people to the view that, hang on, there is something seriously wrong with what's going on here, and, you know, you're just not taking any notice of it. And all efforts I made to inform the three different medical surgeries that I had dealings with over that three-year period fell by the wayside. They just simply weren't interested in anything that I was sending them to them. I had a bit of a confrontation with my doctor, with one of my doctors that I was seeing at the time, about the whole issue. That's how ludicrous and, you know, and insane it got. But we'll go to a quick break, Meryl, and come back and just discuss some of these issues. Two, of course, that I want to pursue is, one is the media's handling of the whole coronavirus and the pandemic measures and what have you, and also looking a little bit more deeply into the medical profession and where they stand now. I think these are important issues that people need to be aware of. Ladies and gentlemen, we are listening to the No Fly Zone. I have with me today Meryl Dorey from the Australian Vaccination Risks Network. We'll be back shortly after this break.
Give me a minute with TNT Radio's Steve Malzberg.
If you listen to singer Cyndi Lauper, who also happens to be a gay icon and who is reportedly married to a man, you'd be led to believe that the LGBT community in this country is headed towards extermination. Recently, she was asked this question here. Listen carefully to both the question and the answer.
What do you make of all the anti-LGBTQ legislation that's making its way in bills across the country?
You know, I believe you don't stop the fight. Equality for everybody or nobody's really equal. This is how Hitler started. You know, just weeding everybody out, and then finally he, you know, I don't think it's a good idea what they're doing, but, you know, you just have to keep fighting for civil rights. I guess that's the way it is in this country. Started out like that, didn't it?
To the questioner, making sure that K through third grade school kids are not taught to question their sexual identity and keeping drag shows out of their school libraries is not anti-gay. To Cyndi Lauper, how dare you compare the treatment of gays to throwing people into ovens and gas chambers? You are one sick chick. Thanks for giving me a minute. I'm Steve Malzberg for TNT Radio.
How hard is it to unlock your car? Not hard. How hard is it to shut your car door? Not hard. How hard is it to start your car? Not hard. How hard is it to put your seatbelt on? People are still dying in car accidents because they were not wearing a seatbelt, which is stupid because it's not that hard. Smarten up, buckle up. Think road safety. A message from the Government of South Australia.
This is the No Fly Zone with Greg Maybury on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Hello, listeners. Welcome back. I'm speaking today with Meryl Dorey from the Australian Vaccination Risks Network. Meryl, before we went to the break, we were talking about the role of the media and, you know, the response generally from the medical profession. But just quickly before we go to that, I wanted to ask you, the Australian Vaccination Risks Network, you initiated a legal case against the TGA, that's the Therapeutic Goods Authority. What was the outcome of that? Can you just give us a quick update on what happened there? What was the case all about and how did that pan out?
Yes, I can. There were actually two cases. One of them was trying to stop the administration of COVID jabs to infants and young children. Yeah. And the other one was trying to withdraw the right for the licensure, which it wasn't even licensed. These jabs are still not licensed, but the provisional approval for these jabs due to the unprecedented levels of death and disability caused by them in just the first short time. We were before the federal court. We had the full bench of the federal court, which is three judges, and they refused to hear any of our evidence, simply saying that we did not have standing. And standing in legal words basically means we didn't have a right to take a case because we didn't have an interest in the outcome of that case, according to the court, despite the fact that the AVN has been doing this for almost 30 years and represents thousands of people who have an interest. So right now we are days away, as far as I know, from a case before the High Court of Australia looking to expand the legal definition of standing so that organizations or individuals who are taking cases that are meant to preserve the health and life of Australians will automatically gain standing. That seems like such a natural and logical situation, but for the federal court, it didn't seem to work. So we are hoping that our case will be heard soon. And if we are successful in that case, and we think we should be, then it's as if our loss in the federal court never happened. We go back to having our hearing, our funds that we had to pay the government go back to us, and we start again. So we've already got the most amazing evidence, incredible expert witnesses, and I think that we have a very good chance of winning as long as we get this standing issue solved.
Well, keep me informed of that, Meryl, and of course we'll stay in touch after this, and I'm keen to know how that pans out. The fact that it had to go to the High Court just is absolutely unbelievable. But look, you know, that's where it is. That's what we have to deal with. It is what it is, as they say. What's your general feeling about those you've met out there? And I'm not referring also to the Vax bus tour, but generally speaking, what's your own feelings and what do you think the feelings are about people generally about how the media has dealt with the COVID pandemic? I mean, people say, oh, we don't trust anything that the media says, blah, blah, blah. We don't trust Big Pharma. We don't trust what the government tells me. But there was a lot of faith and trust that people placed in governments and in the media and the medical profession throughout the COVID thing. This was something that really amazed me, was that, you know, I did a quick survey on Twitter asking people, how much do you trust the drug companies? And it was a very simple straw poll, and 92.5% came back and said, I have zero trust in the pharmaceutical industry. And this was before the vaccination rollout. Yet, you know, we still saw plenty of people getting the vaccination. So that's really what amazed me. People say, no, we don't trust them, but then they actually go out and do it. And, of course, a lot of that has to do with the media pushing it. What's your sense of how people treat or, if you like, react to the media and in terms of their trust or faith that they have in the media?
Well, people don't trust the media, and I don't trust the government statistics either, I have to tell you. But without the media, none of this could have happened. Without the media, the fear campaign couldn't have taken place. Without the media, all the lies that have been told to us about safety and efficacy and how well these things have been tested never would have happened. Greg, at the time that the mandates came in, the vaccination rate in Australia for COVID jabs was about 17%. Mm. Now, that 96% figure that the government is telling us is a complete and bold-faced lie. I will go to court if they want to, but I've been saying that for a long time. We have evidence that was provided to us right at the beginning that a large number of the doses of the COVID jabs are getting thrown out because you can't keep the vials defrosted for more than a certain number of hours. Yeah. And We don't know the exact percentage, but we've been told something upwards of 30% of the jabs that have been distributed have never been administered. So that 96% figure is a total lie. But the fact is, the only reason a lot of people took these jabs is because they were mandated to do it. We have a crisis of courage in this country. If doctors, if nurses, if people who worked in businesses actually all stood up and said, you know what, I'm not taking it. If that means I lose my job, I lose my job. That's fine. If enough people had done that from the word go, there would have been no mandates. It's because we were too cowardly to stand up.
Yeah, I'm sure a lot of, of course, a lot of this, the impetus for a lot of the vaccinations came from businesses that, you know, people were employed by businesses or organizations in the public sector. If enough people had actually done that, how would these businesses and how would these organizations have actually functioned if a sufficient number of people said, no, we're not doing this? You know, I guess, if you like, some kind of a strike, but we didn't see that in your description. A crisis of courage certainly applies here. And, I knew people, fortunately, my own family particularly weren't directly affected by this mandate in the sense that they had to make decisions about working or not working. It affected me, but only in a small way, but certainly with other people, I know that it affected them big time, either by them choosing not to be vaccinated and thereby not being able to work, or saying, yes, I will get the vax, but doing so very reluctantly, because we also had the situation with people who were caring for elderly people in homes. They couldn't get in to, you know, do what they do, which is to care for their elderly relatives, because, they had to get jabbed. So whether they were working or not, or whether they were caring for somebody, there was something there whereby they were forced into taking a vaccination, or they had this difficult choice to make. And, you know, to me, that was one of the most reprehensible and unforgivable things that actually transpired throughout the pandemic. One of the things I, again, wanted to talk about, and again, it harks back to the medical profession itself. You mentioned in the Vax Tour that you had a lot of feedback from doctors who were very concerned. A lot of them had lost their jobs. A lot of them had made decisions to leave the profession, and not just doctors, but of course nurses as well. But can you give us a bit of a sense if there's been a shift in mood and opinion amongst the rank and file practitioners about that, how the pandemic has been managed, particularly in view of now the figures that are coming out about adverse events? Are practitioners still at risk as much professionally if they speak out now? There's a question that I'd like to ask.
Yes, they are. Because of APRA, which is the authority, the government authority, they're not even government. I won't call them the government authority, but they're the organization that's been given authority by the government to actually oversee medical professionals. They came out straight away and said that unless you support government policy on vaccination, which means not being able to have an opinion of your own, not being able to advise your patients in ways that you think is best for them, that you will lose your license to practice medicine and you can even be prosecuted. So doctors are still at risk, and there is a lawsuit starting up to take APRA to court because what they are doing is totally illegal. But again, bad laws are meant to be disobeyed. If doctors had stood up and said, sorry, mate, that's just not the way this is going to work. I have the medical license, not you. And I'm the one sitting in front of this patient, and I'm the one who's going to be telling them what I think is best for them, not what the government thinks is best for everyone. Then none of this would have happened. So doctors have a responsibility to stand up and say no when they think that what they're being asked to do is wrong. So do nurses. So do all people in all professions. We have to have the courage of our convictions. And a lot of people, too many people out there today, are making decisions based on what they think is going to keep their mortgage paid and their roof over their heads. One of the things that I found on the Vax bus was so many people gave up their homes, pulled their kids out of private school and started homeschooling them and said, you know what? I am happier today. I am better off today than I was before because now I actually know what's important. I know that I can be reliant on myself. I don't need to worry about the government or the company, and I can thrive without them, and I can actually not only thrive, but I can do it while upholding what I believe to be right. And I think that we need to go back to that.
You know, you've raised another point. I won't labor this one at the moment, but you've raised a point, and I'm going to look at having somebody on the show down the track where we look at some of the positive outcomes from COVID, because you've just alluded to some of them. And I want to explore that and not just look at some of the positive outcomes, but also look at some of the constructive things that we can do, if not so much to push back on what's coming down the pipeline, but at least to sort of present a kind of a narrative for people that they can go, well, hang on a minute, there is some hope there. There's some real positive optimism out there. And I think that's important for people to appreciate and look at what we have got and, you know, and try and take the narrative forward a little bit. But because at the moment the narrative is you know, overshadowed by this by doom and gloom. You know, I'm not inclined that way myself, but I know that sometimes, you know, even the best of us or the ones that think we can resist it the most, it gets to you after a while. So I think it's important that we send a message out there to people that it's not all doom and gloom and that there may be some positives to come out of this in terms of the way that we look
Absolutely.
At how we live our lives and what have you.
And there is a silver lining to the COVID cloud. You know, it has woken a lot of people up, and that's one thing. Once you see the truth, you can't unsee it.
Exactly.
And the people who have seen the truth are never going to fall for these things again, and that is a great thing. On the AVN's website, we have information about things you can do, steps you can take to actually help support the narrative of freedom and to help actually bring back your rights from the government that has tried to take them away, but they can't. So there are positive steps people can take. Reignite Democracy has some great things they've been putting out too. There are lots of options out there for people, but we have to stop being silent. Too many people think that they can just sit in the background and not do anything and everything will be fine. If I don't raise my head above the parapet, nobody's going to shoot it off. Well, I'm sorry, your head is already up because the government knows whether you've jabbed or not. The government knows what you're doing. And it is time for us to stop being afraid. There are 26 million of us in Australia and only maybe a couple of thousand of them. And they are exactly. terrified that we're going to know about this imbalance in power. We have the power. They don't. We just have to take it and use it.
My general feeling, Meryl, is that that people are starting to wake up and that there is this pushback that's happening and that there will be some kind of an awakening and hopefully a critical mass awakening and hopefully from there a reckoning as well. There has to be, in my view, a reckoning. These people have to be held to account for the decisions that they have made. They certainly cannot skate on this. We cannot let them to do this because if for no other reason, if we do, then we're going to experience the same thing in another 2, 3, 5, 10 years' time without question, in my view. These people really need to be held to account. And but I think, you know, as you've alluded to earlier on, we have to give people sort of positive, constructive, supportive information and ideas and tools with which they can actually stick their head above the parapet without sort of fear of it getting shot off and without sort of, you know, being able to, you know, to feel like they're actually making some kind of a contribution, because everybody can make some contribution. Before, we've only got about 3 minutes left. Meryl, one of the things I wanted to talk about, and we did talk about this in our pre-interview discussions, there was a $1 trillion FISA lawsuit that's in the offing that was initiated, I believe, by Karen Kingston, who was a whistleblower. She was worked, I think, as a contractor for FISA. What do you know about this lawsuit, and what are the implications of this lawsuit?
Now, I'm not sure about Karen Kingston. I know Brooke Jackson.
Oh, Brooke Jackson.
Worked for Ventavia.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's okay. Brooke Jackson worked for Ventavia, which was running the trials for Pfizer, one of the trials. And she actually reported serious fraud and malfeasance that she found being committed by Pfizer. And it wouldn't be the first time they did it either. They paid the highest fine for fraud ever of any company. But she got fired, and the FDA gave her up to Ventavia and to Pfizer. And she is in court. And my understanding is that the judge is making a decision. He's already released 400 pages worth of private documents. And what Brooke Jackson is asking for and what is essential is something called discovery, where they can actually get release of more documents to find out exactly what the fraud was. Once we can prove that Pfizer committed fraud, then their protection under indemnification, the fact that they can't, be sued, even if they did the wrong thing, is out the window. And that's what they're terrified of, because $1 trillion is nothing to what they're going to have to pay once fraud is proved.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, $1 trillion is, in anybody's book, it's a lot of money. But we have to go to a break. We have to finish up the show. Just before we do, what are two of the three top misconceptions people have about vaccinations? You've got about 45 seconds, Meryl.
The misconceptions are that they work and that they are safe. No vaccine has ever been shown to prevent infection. No vaccine has ever been created that did not cause serious side effects or death. All vaccines, all medications can cause serious side effects and death. And it's up to us to know what we're making a decision about. So please take responsibility for yourself and your children.
So let the buyer beware. Caveat emptor. Meryl Dorey, thank you for joining us on the No Fly Zone. We'll have you back soon, and great to catch up with you. Thanks for your time.
Thank you, Greg.